Talk Show.
Recorded live.
You are listening to the Geocaching Podcast, a podcast about everything geocaching, where you'll hear tips and tricks, interviews with cachers, and lots more. Welcome to episode 80 of the Geocaching Podcast, Caching at Night. I am your host, XPunkX, with
Monty Ryder
and Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join us live in our chat room to participate with other listeners. That can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.info. Just click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. And if you happen to be listening to this on your iPod later on in the week and you have any feedback you'd like to put in, give us a call at 206-350-3GPS. That's our voicemail line. And you can always follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. So welcome back, everybody. It's been an incredible weather here. Montu, how have you been?
Oh, pretty good. Haven't been able to do much this past weekend. Wound up having to work on Saturday. Bummer. And then Sunday we had rain. So, oh well, better luck next weekend.
Well, around here, the weather was just too good to stay inside, so I decided to play some hooky. Went out Saturday with a buddy of mine, did some photography. He's got a new camera body he wanted to test. I had a new lens that I needed to, play with and, figure out how it works and stuff. But I did some casual caching using the iPhone, which was not easy to do, but it was kind of fun, especially because it was, one device right there. I hadn't planned on doing any caching at all. It just kind of dawned on me, pick it up and see what I could find. And, I found five, I think it was, caches that way. So not bad at all for, not even trying. But I do have some photos up on Flickr from that day. Those were photos for the sake of photos, not like geocaching photos, really. But the geocaches did take us to a couple of good photos, so that was cool. Then Sunday, we decided to take a couple of hours off and go caching with some friends of ours. Unfortunately, we kind of got rained out. We were planning on doing some, nice hike in the woods ones, and it started raining. It got cold, so we packed it in and did some, easier caches. The kind of drive-up style caches, and had a lot of fun. Dinner afterward was even more fun, just hanging out and chatting with the friends. XBuckX, what have you been up to?
Well, I hit a couple caches yesterday. I had to go to the library and drop off a few movies. So I grabbed the GPS before I went to work and just hit the back roads on the way to work after I dropped the movies off and found a couple caches. They were both in the cemetery, which they have their place. I'm starting to really get this longing for it, especially this time of the year where it's a little bit chilly, to do the walk in the woods, the long walk in the woods. And it's been a while for me to do that. I'm really longing for those caches in the woods. But I had a funny thing, too. I had a cache that, after the second cemetery cache, I did the, find next cache that was in my GPS. And it took me to a road that's kind of a highway. It's a bypass type thing. And as I'm driving up to it, first, I realized that I've already hit it, and the reason that it wasn't marked in my GPS is because when I actually hit it, I last time didn't use my GPS because I already knew where it was at, so I hadn't marked it as already found. But the funny thing is my GPS, since it was so close to the other road, it was actually down off of the bypass in this like little shopping area, but the shopping area was so close to the bypass that it actually told me to just take the bypass, and there's no exit right there to get off at the shopping center, but it told me to take the bypass and pretty much wanted me to stop on the bypass and get out and get this cache. But luckily I had to use my common sense. Well, for two, I already knew I hit it. For three, I had to use my common sense and not just park my car on the bypass.
I've seen that an awful lot myself.
Like we were talking about last week, the guy who just pulls into, or I think it was actually Sunny and Sandy, just talking about a guy who pulls into the lake and doesn't even realize that he's in the lake until his car drowns.
Yeah, we had reported on the one in New York where the guy pulled onto the train tracks. And that was the second guy to do it in exactly the same spot. You know, you got to think that there's some common sense that would take over. And, you know, if nothing else, some, you know, preservation of life instincts.
Yeah, and you know, I just wonder how many times people try to actually sue the GPS companies, even though it states clearly that there's, you know, don't, this is for reference only. I wonder how many times do people actually try to sue the GPS company?
Well, significant enough that they're very worried about it, so I don't know, but more than I think would be reasonable.
Well, Daryl, I hear that we had reviewed the iPhone app a couple weeks back, and I hear that there's a new version update, and I'm guessing that you have downloaded it since you have the iPhone. Can you tell us about it?
Yep, version 1.1 of the geocaching app for iPhone and iPod Touch is available now through the iTunes App Store. It provides some bug fixes and improvements from user feedback, including the option to filter out prior finds from a geocaching login. It's a free upgrade for anyone who purchased version 1, and it's still $9.99 for all new users. We'll put the info link and the iTunes link into the show notes. But unfortunately, I haven't really been able to test it since the app is not accepting my username and or password. It just keeps coming up with errors. So hopefully they'll have that issue resolved. I think that's probably some kind of server issue. But you know, as soon as they do get that resolved, I'm anxious to give it a shot.
Now, another thing that I noticed this week, and maybe other people on Twitter have noticed too, the DeLorme GPS actually now has a Twitter account too, and that can be found at twitter.com/DeLormeGPS. And I'm following them so far. A lot of they actually followed me first, but so far a lot of updates as far as where they're at is in different REIs doing some products for the PN40 product demonstrations. But it's definitely an interesting to follow a GPS company on Twitter. So go ahead and check that out. We'll have that link in our show notes, too. Now, on to our topic for tonight. We're talking about night caching, and I think this is actually an appropriate time to talk about this because it's actually the best time in the Northern Hemisphere for night caching. It's getting dark earlier, and it's not too cold yet, and the leaves are falling from the trees, so you get a little bit better better reception on your GPS. I know it's kind of depressing when you get out of work and it's pitch black and you go to work and it's pitch black. I mean, when do you have time to cache except for the weekends? And let's face it, sometimes the weekends are, you know, used for cleaning up around the house. But now is actually the best time for night caching. Now, there a couple things that we're going to talk about here is night caches versus caching done at night. And there is a difference because night caches use what's called fire tacks or reflectors or lights to guide the way. And these things may not be visible during the day. And what the fire tacks are small reflectors which only shed light when hit by a light source. And that's obviously different from caches done at night because almost any cache can be done at night. But not every night cache can be done during the day. In fact, a lot of times if they're set up as a night cache, it means that they're doing at night only. Montu, what else do we need to know about night caching?
Well, definitely observe the rules of the property. Don't go caching after hours. If the park specifically says park closes at dusk, then obviously, that's not a good place for night cache to even be in the first place. But definitely obey the rules of the property. That's definitely a keynote because you don't need to be out there and then maybe the park ranger or somebody else sees you out there and figures, okay, this guy's out here vandalizing the property, calls the cops, now you got to deal with them. Also, never cache alone after dark. You never know what's going to happen. And you know, if something does happen, it's always better to have a buddy along to go get help if need be.
Well, and it's you know, a lot easier to trip and fall because you might not see those, you know, pits uneven portions of the trail or whatever. So definitely you want to make sure to have a buddy there. And you know, it's important to have a good flashlight so that you can hopefully see those things before you trip on them. You know, the little pen light isn't probably going to cut it. It's certainly not the little flashlight on your keychain. So make sure you have a good flashlight. And headlamps are great, too, because it means that it's that much less that you have to hold. You can walk with it, you know, put it on, you just point it down, you open the cache, and you have both hands free. So if you don't have one, check them out. They're not terribly expensive. But one of the other things that you might think about are UV lights. And these can help because they're not as bright as the regular white LEDs or, you know, halogens or, you know, whatever other light source that you're typically used to. But they'll still give you enough light to typically find the cache. It will light up many items that normally aren't found in the woods, like light colors and reflectors and stuff like that. But it won't cause the night blindness that I have typically from some of these other light sources. Now, most importantly, though, go ahead.
I was just going to say, in our chat room here, our listener Bella Candy had actually mentioned that actually less light is sometimes better because it gives your eyes a chance to adjust to the darkness. And full moon caching is even better. And I would imagine that, because if your eyes are adjusted, then you can actually probably see fairly good in the dark. At least, you know, because your eyes will adjust. I think that's probably a matter. I know for myself, I'd want to at least take a flashlight so in case I get lost. But that's a good idea, though, to let your eyes adjust and actually, you know, be able to see around you due to your eyes being adjusted, because that's you get a better, broader spectrum, you know, wider field, as opposed to if you're just using the flashlight.
Right. Well, that's one of the nice things about the UV flashlights is that they tend not to cause that night blindness problem either. You know, if you have a huge difference in lighting, that's where you'll run into that more often. But as I was saying, though, you definitely want to bring extra batteries for both the flashlight and the GPSR. There's going to be a lot of trouble if you run out there and both go dead on you. So make sure to have extra for both. And what else should we look about bringing along, X-Punk X?
Well, I would definitely bring a device to help contact help if needed, i.e. your cell phone, maybe a flare. Probably not recommended if you're in the woods, a flare, but you know, something where you can contact help in case you get lost. And again, make sure that you have your cell phone charged. You don't want to get into the middle of the woods and then have a cell phone that's dead. And if you're doing, what I would recommend too is if you're going to do a long hike, maybe into the woods where you're not going to get cell phone reception for a while, turn your cell phone off. That way, that it doesn't, you know, if it's poor or shoddy reception, that it doesn't actually run your battery down. So don't you know, bring a cell phone, something that you can contact help, especially if, you know, someone falls and gets hurt. You're going to need some help. And so, well, you don't want to have to carry your caching partner out of the woods. Bring a first aid kit, too, because you are more likely to get hurt in the night. But even if you do and it's something more serious where you need medical attention, bring your cell phone, some way to contact help, or your friends. That way you can let them know that you're still alive and haven't gotten eaten by the wolves. Another thing, too, is to remember the tracks or breadcrumbs on your GPS. These are very helpful, but make sure that to make any key points along the trail that to help you find your way back. Like mark the trailhead, mark where the trail splits, mark where you parked your car. So, you know, mark all of the things that are important. Use your breadcrumbs, but again, your breadcrumbs are going to be useless if you don't have batteries, if your batteries die. So, again, important point, bring your batteries.
Now, one other thing, definitely important with a night cache, at least in my opinion, would be to let somebody know where you're going to be going and when to expect you back. That way, if you and your friend get hurt, somebody knows where to come looking for you. Pay attention to the types of plants and animals that are in the area. In most cases, it is best to make noise. Talking or singing works well to alert the animals of your presence, and also, of course, dress for the weather. The weather is subject to change as temperatures drop, and you start getting condensation. So you might get wet, so it might even be a good thing to have a spare change of clothes back in the car.
Well, you know, that's always a good piece of advice, too, because you can fall into the river at any time, and as it gets colder and we get some more snow out there, and, you know, snow starts to melt, and it can be even worse yet. Now, Unnamed Mike also brought up an interesting device to bring along, too, which I believe actually Spin Doc Bob had mentioned on one of the CRTs, which is the Spot Messenger, and that's a satellite-based device that will send emergency alerts and even just a status update via the satellite, so you don't have to worry as much about losing the cell phone reception, and someone will always know where you are if you need to get some help. But before we close up, one of the things that you want to take a look for to figure out if you're looking at a night cache or just going out for a cache at night is the night cache icon, which is like the little crescent moon and a couple of stars. And that is something that you can filter on as well through the pocket queries. So make sure if you're going to go for a night cache that it has that icon. And I highly recommend it. They are so much fun. Well, Andy, do you have anything else to add?
Well, I just wanted to state, too, that we are about ready to wrap up the show. So if you are listening to our show live, either in the chat room or listening to the stream, give us a call, 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. And, give us a call, press the Request to Talk button, and if you've done night caches, if you've got questions about night caches, we want to talk to you on the podcast. So 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Daryl Monty, I've actually never myself done a night cache, mainly because a lot of our caches in here are either cemetery caches or quick, easy hit-and-run ones or parks that close. There's not a whole lot of places that we can find that are open late like that. Where do you guys find that the night caches are available? I'm gonna actually, tonight after I'm done here, I want to run a pocket query and see about night caches in my area. But you guys, where do you guys find night caches?
Well, I've only actually done one night cache locally, and it was a blast, but the park actually closes at 10. It's not based on sunrise or sunset. It's open, I believe it was 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. every day. So in the summer, you couldn't necessarily make it a night cache by the time the park closed, but it was really nice, right around early fall when we did it, because the temperatures were a little warmer. We got out there about 8 o'clock, did the night cache, and we were out by 9 o'clock. And it's fire tax on that one to lead you back into the cache, so you did have to have that stronger flashlight that you could kind of point at the trees, see where the fire tax were. Then you hit special fire tack marker, and you had to turn off your lights, look in a specific direction, and there were blinking LEDs with little masks over the LED itself so that you could only see it at a very tiny radius. And you had to walk toward it like X number of feet, and then you had to do the next one. And after like three or four of those, it took you to the location of the cache itself, and you just had to try to find it. And as I recall, there was a fire attack or two there to help us out as well. It was a lot of fun. It was the first one and really the only one that we've done as a night cache. And I just can't wait to do more.
Well, and Bella Candy in our chat room actually brought in a good point that I didn't even think about, that you need to be careful when placing night caches because it's easy to lead people into the cache, fire attacks or whatnot, but to lead them back out, you're going to have to remember to do that. Either that or they're going to have to follow their breadcrumbs, but which is another good reason to remember your batteries. But, think about how easy it is to come back out. So maybe use backward fire attacks, put them on the way back out, or an easy way to get back out. And again, remember also, Unnamed says that again, remember water, and this is very important whenever you cache, but a lot of times you forget at night to bring your water because it's not as hot as it is during the day. But, you know, if you're out hiking, you will get thirsty, and you need to replenish that. So bring water, all the same things that you would bring to a day cache, besides maybe sunscreen. But, you know, bring all the rest of the same things. Montu, Daryl, anything else to put in here?
Well, I've done a few of the caches at night, especially when we did that night event about 3 weeks ago now, I guess it was. And those are always fun, and it raises a difficulty on some of those easier caches. You know, if they're not night caches, they won't have the reflectors to help you identify it, and you're just kind of staring into the blackness, especially when you had no moon like we had, trying to find these caches. And it's a lot more fun. A lot more frustrating, though, especially on that first cache we did. We had probably about 20 people hunting for it for a good 10, 15 minutes, and we were all pretty much ready to give up by the time someone actually found the container. But you know, just the walks in the dark, priceless with a group of people. So try it out. I'm going to get into some geeky stuff here. We have some of the lightsabers from classic collectibles or something like that, which we passed out mostly for fun for the kids to play with, and, you know, we're all kind of kids at heart. But we took those on the walk with us, and it was great because we had a bigger group of people, and you can see these lightsabers lit up, and it's, you know, where's everyone? And they just hold up the lightsabers. So nice way to identify where your groups are. You know, these were different colors. So, you know, you kind of remembered who had which and could keep track of everyone in the group that way.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I never really thought about that. Anyone else done a night cache that would like to talk about it? Geek Boy, I'm going to bring you on here. You've done some night caching. Any other wisdom that you'd like to impart?
Well, in the case of the night cache we did, we were actually expecting it to be a lot more serious and devious than it really was. So we were looking for the reflectors being, you know, a good distance away, and when in fact they were only about 20 or 30 yards away. So we made our first attempt very much harder than it really should have been.
Okay. Well, if no one else has any other input tonight, we'll go ahead and close it up. But if you are listening to the podcast recorded on your iPod or other media player, and you have any other information that you'd like to give us, whether it be for caching at night or anything else, we'd love to hear your input. And our phone number is 206-350-3DPS, and that again is a voicemail number. You can leave a voicemail anytime, and we can get it on the show. One thing I'd like to address here quickly before we do hang up here is we've got a couple comments lately on our show notes about the levels that are being different in our podcast. That's one thing that I think frustrates us the most about TalkShoe service. We can only match our levels to the best of our abilities. If anyone else has any good ideas or suggestions or hardware that we should try or donations that they'd like to give, let us know, and we'd love to hear that too. So we strive to make a better podcast for everybody. We like to share our information that we have and get information from you guys too. So our email address can be found on our show notes at geocachingpodcast.info. And again, we do this every Tuesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call us live at 724-444-7444. And our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes can be found, and all of our links to our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.info. And again, our voicemail number is 206-350-3GPS. And you can do that anytime and leave us a voicemail. With that, I sign off, and I will see you next week. Have a great week caching.